Welcome to Faith Walking Conversations. In this episode, Ken Schumann and a group of faith walkers share about differentiation of self, the Stockdale paradox, and blame in the context of COVID-19. This conversation was originally recorded in May of 2020. We want to remind you that Faith Walking's mission is to make wholeness possible for individuals, communities, and the world. Visit us at www.faithwalking.us. Join this conversation. I'm gonna look twice at you until I see the Christ in you. I'm gonna look twice.
Today, I'm thinking about three things. I've been thinking about pondering these things all week long, related to the pandemic and related to my own ability and capacity to manage it and face it and those sorts of things. And these are all three are outlined on the little handout we've got today. The first one is I had an opportunity to really recognize that I'm not as differentiated as I want to be. If you've been in faith walking, you understand the concept of self-differentiation. If you haven't, or if you need me to remind you, self-differentiation is the capacity to be who I am, you to be who you are, for you to get really clear about your boundaries, your guiding principles, about what you're responsible for, what you're not responsible for. And then it's this increasing capacity to not worry about what other people think. To let them be able to be them, to let them choose what they choose, and you choose what you choose. And I'm finding, you know, on Facebook and social media and just out in public, there's a lot of worrying, fretting over what other people are doing, or maybe what people are going to think of me by what I'm doing. And I teach this stuff all the time. I have multiple groups going this week. In fact, we have 10 new faith walking groups that launched this week, where we're teaching different pieces of our content and different things. And I know several of you are in those groups. And it always is frustrating and disappointing and challenging when I realize that I still have tons of work to do, right? And so last Saturday, I drove to Lowe's, which is a big box hardware store here in the States, and I needed a can of paint. And all I was going for was for paint, but I know there's tons of people at Lowe's on Saturday. I wheel into the big parking lot, and I drive into a parking place, and what's running through my mind is, am I going to wear a mask covering over my face or not? And it was all kind of dependent upon what the crowd did. Okay, I'm going to kind of check out the group. If there's a lot of people wearing masks, I'm going to wear mine. If there's not anybody wearing masks, I don't know. And it's shocking to me that all of that was running through my head because I want to be more differentiated than that. So do you see that that's a lack of differentiation? If I'm worried about what other people are doing or what they're thinking of me, that means I'm still fused in a lot of ways. And so right there in my car, I did some coaching for myself. And the coaching that I did is in your notes, but the coaching is around, okay, what do I believe? What do I think? And what am I going to do? And those are always kind of the questions. What do I think about this? What do I believe about this? And what am I going to do about this, regardless of what anybody else does? And so as I thought about it, I also thought about, okay, what are my boundaries? I'm not responsible for any other adult. That's a boundary principle, okay? I'm responsible for myself. I'm not responsible for any other adult. But I believe, as a follower of Jesus, that I am not responsible for other people, but I'm responsible to them, to love them really well. I think that's what Jesus invites us to do as his followers, and I want to follow his way and emulate his path. And so so I'm not responsible for them, but I am responsible to them to love them. And so what I determined in a quick, and it didn't take but about a minute in my car, was as I've been talking about throughout this process, I'm in my 60s, and so I need to protect myself. First of all, I don't want to get this disease at all. And the truth is, I've said this before, it's not that I'm afraid of dying as much as I don't want to endure the pain and the suffering that comes with this thing. That's pretty dramatic. And so I'm choosing to wear a mask, facial mask to cover my face every time when I go out in public. And I'm doing that for me. I'm doing it to protect myself. But there's a second reason I'm doing it also. I'm doing it because I want to love the people in my community well, and I will love them well when I cover my face and don't spread the disease to others if I were to get it. Now, I don't think I have it. I don't feel like I have it. But one of the weird things about this COVID-19 is you can have it and not know it. You can be carrying and be contagious and not know it. And so in that moment, I differentiated myself. I decided what I believed, what I was going to do, what I was not going to do. What I was going to do was, and I'm committed to do this, and I'm giving you now. And so, by the way, this is a guiding principle. So my guiding principle is, from now until the pandemic is over, I'm wearing a mask in public. And I'm doing that for myself and for the good of my community. And so now when I drive into Lowe's this weekend, if I happen to go to Lowe's, or if I go to HEB, which is our grocery store, or if I go pick up food from a restaurant, I'm going to live by that guiding principle. And so I hope you hear in that. There have been about two or three components to what it means to differentiate yourself. The more technical language would be to differentiate a self. We do that by identifying what our boundaries are, what I'm responsible for, what I'm not responsible for. And we do that by defining what our guiding principles are. What do I believe? What do I think? How do I want to behave? And those combined differentiate me from others. And then having the courage and the discipline to say, and I'm not going to worry about what other people are doing. I'm not going to criticize what they do. It's been interesting to watch because it depends on what store I go into. So I went into Costco yesterday, and Costco has decided that they have a guiding principle for their organization. They've defined themselves by saying, you don't get to come into a Costco store unless you wear a mask. And they have a deal where from 9 to 10 in the morning, I don't even want to say this, but senior adults get to come in between 9 and 10, and that's anybody over 60. And so my wife and I ran down to Costco. We had to get a few things. But I'm really happy that Costco has that guiding principle, because everybody in the place, every single person had a mask on. But when I go to Lowe's and one third of the people are wearing masks and two thirds of the people aren't wearing masks, I'm working also on not being judgmental, not being critical, worrying about that. That's what differentiation is. Just a quick lesson on differentiation. So that's the first thing. Second thing I wanted to talk about, I was reminded this week of a concept in a book on leadership called Good to Great It's by Jim Collins. It's been around a while. He's written a little small version just for nonprofits that I regularly refer to. But in the book Good to Great, he talks about a principle that he calls the Stockdale paradox. And he interviewed a pilot during the Vietnam War who was one of the first pilots shot down over Vietnam, and he was held in captivity in what's known as the Hanoi Hilton prison camp for 8 years, waiting on the war to be over. So can you imagine, right at the beginning, he gets shot down and thrown in a prison camp where they tortured him and abused him regularly, and he was there for 8 years of his life. And Collins was interviewing him and wanted to know, because not everybody made it out of the camp. And he asked him, okay, what was the difference? And Stockdale said that the difference was this thing that became the Stockdale paradox. It's in the notes, but let me read it for you. The Stockdale paradox is, no matter what happens to you, retain your faith that you will prevail in the end, regardless of what's going on. While at the same exact time, confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they might be. And so it's this combination of saying, I'm going to be optimistic and hope that I can bear under the challenge and I can make it to the finish line, while at the same time realizing, and that may be a really long time, and it may be really difficult, and I might struggle, and I might be in pain, and I might be uncomfortable. But I'm going to face up to whatever those brutal facts are, and I'm going to have hope that one day I'm going to go home. That's the Stockdale paradox. So think with me about how that applies to our current pandemic. Some people, I think, are just saying, oh, it's no big deal. It's going away. It's not going to impact me. It isn't going to impact anybody around me. And I think that's kind of a naive approach, or maybe an over-optimistic approach. Others are saying, well, you know, we were in quarantine for 6 weeks, and now here in Texas anyway, we're beginning to be let go, and oh, everything's going to be back to normal. I don't think that's going to happen. Everything I'm hearing and seeing is talking about, you know, we may be right here at this time next year. Now, do I want that? No. But guess what? Those might be the brutal facts. And so can I have hope and know, you know what, whatever it is, however long this lasts, I'm going to bear under it and I'm going to make it, because God's with me and God's guiding and protecting me. And at the same time, I recognize I don't know when it's going to be over. I have no clue when a cure will come, or when an antidote for it will come, an immunization. So that's the Stockdale paradox. All right. Third thing on my list today of stuff I'm thinking about is try to be aware of, because I think this is an indicator and a place of growth toward emotional maturity, is when we quit blaming, when we quit looking for someone to blame or something to blame. Looking for a conspiracy behind it all is something to blame. The truth is that blaming, looking for blame, doesn't really help anything. The truth is, we have a reality that we have to live with. And I believe a more differentiated, a more emotionally mature way of being is not look to blame anybody, but realize, okay, this is going on. This is what we're faced with here in 2020. And it is our life. And can I face it without trying to blame somebody? That means I think that I'm focused on my own thinking, and I'm focused on my own behavior. I'm focused on how I'm showing up, how I'm taking care of myself, how I'm facing the pandemic, and not worrying about what other people are doing or where it came from or whatever that might be, and trusting God to take care of me in the midst of it. So we talked about differentiation, some things around that. We talked about the Stockdale paradox, and we talked about blaming. I think all three kind of fit together, but there are three kind of random things that that I'm thinking about today. Any question or comment?
There's a saying that we use here in the UK, which I think summarizes much of what you've said, Ken. It came about during the Civil War at the time of the Puritans, and it was trust in God and keep your powder dry. Basically, what it means is, and very similar to what Martin Luther's attitude was during the plague. He says, if the government says X, I will fumigate, I will do this, I will make every human effort to stop the plague. But if my neighbor is in need and I die or whatever, I will consider my work on earth done, but I will take every precaution. I will take personal responsibility as much as possible, mm-hmm. but equally I will trust in God as mm-hmm. well. So it's trust in God, keep your powder dry. So mm-hmm. it's not just a case of, well, I'm not going to do anything at all. I need to be, as an individual human, I need to take personal responsibility. But at the same time, I'm trusting in God.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I just really appreciate like the Stockdale paradox in specifically making it okay to sort of think about the worst, but not in a way where you don't have hope in the midst of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times we sort of skirt that. Well, like that it's like kind of what the other person was saying, like kind of one or the other, and but not that. But I also think that there's almost like a, I can sort of think of something as things really being bad and things really being as bad as they could be. But because I have a God who's greater, then it's okay for me to actually go there with mm-hmm. the fact that I'm going there with a God who's greater, and I'm going there still in a place of hope, not in a place of kind of, you know, unable and incapable of doing anything now and kind of spiraling. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that, because I think that in a world that we live in, it's sort of like if you have to be optimistic and sort of, but in order to be optimistic, you kind of like pretend those things don't exist, or you're sort of this pessimist realist that's always kind of, you know, the person who's kind of raining on everyone else's parade. But to be able to sort of own that, accept that, and have a better perspective because you're willing to go there is actually mm-hmm. a very, very hopeful, can be a very hopeful approach.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I took from it, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, I totally agree, Courtney. I said this, I think, on our very first Keep Calm Friday. I believe that God has created us to face challenge. Now, we don't like to face challenge, but I think our whole systems are designed to be able to adapt to the challenges in front of us and to figure it out, or to, with God's guidance, manage it. And so that for me is the hope. Yeah. What if it takes us 2-3 years to get beyond this? Well, what I believe is we'll adapt, we'll figure it out, and that because God has created us, he's designed us to face challenge, we will not just survive it, but thrive in the midst of it because of God's enablement. So I am totally with you.
I like that too, Ken, that it. I think looking at the most brutal thing and trusting God keeps us away from magical thinking.
Right.
From mm-hmm. the hyper spiritual attitude, but mm-hmm. the reality, because God is in the reality. Mm-hmm. And he can certainly, at least I've experienced this, he can certainly handle the strength of my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm angry, if I'm fearful, and it doesn't mean I'm not godly. It means he wants to hear it, and he wants to teach me to name clearly my pain, my emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Because naming rightly is so godly, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes, Deborah, what that stirred for me was, and sometimes we forget that there's a book in the Bible called Lamentations. Mm-hmm. where the author cries, just throws his heart open to God and says, I don't know where you are. I don't know what you're doing. I'm lamenting. I'm in pain. Here I am. And that was okay.
Yeah. And there's all those Psalms where mm-hmm. we're disoriented and then they bring us back to orientation.
Mm-hmm.
God Absolutely. Knows we're going to be in a somersault world.
Yep. All right, gang. Well, let me break us into some breakout rooms and let y'all talk about this among yourselves. So one of the things that I think is extremely important and extremely powerful about all of this work we do, folks, is that we can get it in our heads, but it doesn't get in our feet without practice. And so we just keep practicing and we keep practicing, and the practice is catching ourselves. Tricia, when we're oh yeah, there I am. I mean, it was like me last Saturday. I caught myself. I realized, well, you're behaving in a really non-differentiated way. Well, that's not who I want to be. So how do I want to be, and what do I do to change my behavior? And it's all of that work, and it's work, but it's that work that leads to our transformation. And one day we recognize, we catch ourselves and we say, oh my gosh, I normally would have looked for blame here, and I didn't blame at all, because we practiced our way into that new way of being. And what happens for me is it slips up on me, and suddenly one day I've made a ton of progress and didn't even realize it. That makes sense? Good. Thank you for sharing that. That's really helpful. What else? What if I just called some names? Veronica, you unmuted, so you get to go. You saved somebody from getting their name called.
I guess I have a hard time with the reality. It's, when you say reality, it was like, oh, and my face, because it's really hard for me to have the balance with the faith and the reality.
Uh-huh.
Because with the reality, it's like my brain is thinking, well, this is going to be worse, and it's going to be for a year. And then my faith, my soul say, well, you need to only put your faith in Jesus, and we are going through this together. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and it's really, really hard for me to have the balance with both things. So yeah. I just want to, you know, let you know that it was super strong, the word for me. And if you can explain more about that, I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Veronica. Thank you for your honesty. I don't know what I would say. So typically when I don't know what to say, I ought to shut my mouth, but I don't. So I'm not going to now either. So let me just process out loud. So I think for me, where do I want to go here? So let's take Jesus himself. Jesus seemed to have an awareness, whatever we believe about him laying aside his deity or whatever, but he seemed to have an awareness that the cross was coming. And there's a verse of scripture in, I believe it's Luke 9, where he transitions from the ministry he was doing up in the Galilee area, up around the Sea of Galilee. And he, and the scripture says, and I love the language of it. It's an old language, but the language is he set his face for Jerusalem. And that thing of set his face, it really connects to some of our language. He made a positive vow. He committed himself. And he did all of that, I believe, anticipating what was to come when he got there. So obviously he had faith, and obviously he trusted God. And yet at the same time, he realized that suffering was coming, hardship was coming, the cross was coming, death was coming. And he lived in the tension of both those things. The clear picture of what was to come, but in deep faith and hope and trust in God, that God was going to take care of him even in the midst of it. And even in the middle of it, we find him in the garden crying out to God, God, if you would take this from me, take it. I don't want to have to suffer this. And yet, he didn't lose hope or lose faith that God would be with him in the midst of it. So I think Jesus himself is a pretty good example of that, don't you think? I'm gonna quit now. Go ahead.
I think it's a really good example, because he put, you know, he say with the all the humanity, I feel fear, I feel I don't know what to do. Even if I am your son, I don't know what to do. I have mm-hmm. all these questions. I guess he have questions, and he doesn't know what God is going to do. But at the same time, he decide trust God and say, well, I'm here with you, and whatever is going to happen, I am right. with you. You know, and I know you are going to be with me. But it's hard to have the balance with both things, mm-hmm. you know, the reality mm-hmm. and your faith, because mm-hmm.
it is.
If the reality is too strong, mm-hmm. you lose your faith. And if the yeah. faith you are, so that is.
Yeah. And I think just acknowledging it's hard. And it's okay to acknowledge that. It's just hard. And yet, God made us for hard, so we can deal with it. We can handle it. Really good. Thank you for that conversation, Veronica.
I think for me too, I think it just got stirred up today because I went to the grocery store, that I'm still in the mode of, we're all going to help protect each other, aren't we? So the queue into the grocery store was short. But once I got in, I saw that the people in the grocery store, there were way too many. And people were not paying attention to appropriate distance between yeah. each other. To one point, I told my small group, at one point, I just stood still. And I had my mask on. And I didn't shout. I just said, hey, people, we need to keep appropriate distance between ourselves. So here I am trying to manage the whole grocery store, or those around me, the five or six people around me. But I just thought, what happened? Mm-hmm. Did everybody think that this was all pretend and everything's okay now? Mm-hmm. And that whole thing of, oh, gosh, I think they don't realize. And so when I got home, I told Bruce, I'm never going to the store this time of day again. I will only go early in the morning or right before they close, because other people are not cognizant mm-hmm. that there's still a virus. Mm-hmm. So I need to own me and mm-hmm. let them own them. And yeah. I will show up when it's safe and reasonable and smart.
Yeah.
That's for me today. Thank
good.
You for letting me share.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thank you, Deborah. And I think you represent all of us. I think we all do the same kinds of things. And so it again, like I said to Tricia, it's that ongoing practice of saying, okay, yeah, okay, here I showed up and I wanted to tell the whole story what we're going to do now. And that's not my job, not my role. And yet I'm going to alter my behavior. I'm going to do something different because this was not okay with me. And folks, I believe in all that. So here's what I believe. I believe it's okay to talk about the things that make us anxious. And that talking about being anxious doesn't mean we don't have faith that God's going to take care of us. I have faith God's going to take care of me no matter what. I may get the disease, I may not get the disease. God's going to be there with me if I do. God may take me, he may not take me. If he does, God's there with me. I have all the faith and trust in that. But I can still be anxious because I don't want suffering. I don't want pain. I don't want my family to suffer. I don't want to lose them. I don't want to leave them behind. I mean, all of the things. And so I do think it's this both and, that faith and some anxiety of facing the reality of the life we live in is just honest. Sorry, I got to preaching there for a minute. Laura, John, can I come back to you? Can you hold it?
Yeah.
Laura, I'd like to hear from you for a moment. I know you're really quiet. Would you be willing to unmute and talk to me?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I really... I actually am not having, I don't feel like I'm having a real hard time with the coronavirus thing specifically.
Yeah.
But what I shared with Veronica in my small group was the Stockdale paradox really made me think of so many other things in my life. I think it's so applicable to the pandemic that we're in right now, but anything. And like what I shared with her was, so I got divorced a few months ago after a long separation and a really unhealthy marriage. And my pastor at the time, so I'm someone who's very glass half full. I'm very optimistic. I'm very hopeful. I can find the good in just about anything. Throughout this long separation with my ex-husband, I would have said I was very, very hopeful. But my hope was not in God, like you're saying. My hope was not that no matter what happens, God's taking care of me. My hope was that God's going to fix my marriage. And I've had other situations like that with my kids. I have kids who are young adults and teenagers that have gone through some very rough things. Where at different times I've had my hope pinned on, you know, God's going to fix this relationship, or God's going to fix this situation that my kid is in, or different things. And so when you were talking about the Stockdale paradox and what it said in the notes, what was really sticking out to me was about our hope being in the right place. That we can be unrealistically optimistic and we can have our hope on the circumstances. And like in this situation we're in now, if our hope is in, well, I'm not going to get sick because God's going to protect me, or I'm not going to lose my job, I'm going to be okay financially, I'm going to be, you know, or this is all going to pass real quickly. If that's where we have our hope, we stand to potentially be disappointed because we've decided what we want God to do. And when we put God in a box, that's not the kind of hope that he calls us to be a prisoner of. Our hope is, like you said, no matter what happens, if I get sick, if I die, if people close to me die, if I'm unemployed, if, you know, whatever happens, trusting in God's word and in his promises and his goodness and his faithfulness, even if we don't know. And I think that applies right now, but that applies to so many things. I know I've seen that play out in my life, like so many times. And that's something that God's has spoken to me about for years, just his faithfulness. That's something that God like beats me over the head with, just his faithfulness. And that, you know, regardless of the circumstances, to just trust in him and know, you know, no matter what it looks like, I can trust in the truth of God's word and in his good character and in his love for me and for my family and every, you know, all his children. So I really liked that, the Stockdale paradox. And just thinking about our hope in Christ.
Boy, that's really good stuff, Laura. Thanks for sharing all that.
You're welcome.
Well done. But John, I want to hear what you got to say, brother. Share with me.
I just find it helpful to try and live our lives in 24-hour compartments.
Mm-hmm.
to live present and to live present future. I can't do anything about the past.
Right.
But I can live for today. And I'm also reminded of the last days of the prophet Jeremiah, you know, great man of God. And yet, in the end, my understanding is that he ended up being basically taken off to Egypt. But the point was, in the trial, in the circumstances, he was faithful to, you know, to the Lord in the situation, difficult though it was. And he led his life on a day-to-day basis.
Great reminder, John. Great reminder. Live in the moment. Live in today. Be fully present for this 24 hours. And what does God promise us? Daily bread. So we've got bread for today. We've got provision for today. Great to see all of you. Thank you for being here. We'll be back here again next week. So I see you then. Hope you have a good weekend.
For more information about Faith Walking, visit www.faithwalking.us. We want to remind you that Faith Walking exists because of your financial support. Please consider giving at faithwalking.us/donate. Thank you for listening.
Until I see the Christ in you, till I'm looking through the eyes of love, I'm looking through the eyes of